It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
Tennis Bets Live Thursday edition. Indian Wells is underway. The gang is all here. We've got action in tennis paradise. A lot to break down from the betting spaces. Let's go around the horn and check in with everybody. See how everyone's doing. Do a vibe check, if you will. Directly under me, we got betting on X Zachary Cohen. Zico, welcome to the program. We've had some ups and downs already. We've got some clear skies as the weather expert. You've got to like that. But ultimately, the first day of Indian Wells, how's everything going?
I thought I was the conditions expert, not the weather expert. I can't tell you when it's going to rain. Although, if it's raining, I could already tell you it's going to rain. But anyway.
I'd love to take over as the weather expert. I always wanted to be a weatherman when I was growing up.
Okay. All right. But, yeah, I'm off to a pretty tough start. Like I was just telling you this before, I had Erica Andreeva to win a set against Danielle Collins. She had set points in both sets and did not end up coming through for me. So, hopefully only up from here.
Did you feel like maybe Collins was telling you to shut up?
Maybe. Yeah. Maybe. I was getting pumped up when she was starting to miss, which is poor tennis etiquette. So,
all right. Diagonal bottom left from the from me, bottom left on the screen, Pamela Maldonado. Pam, welcome back to the show. I know this tournament's always a big one. It's viewed as the fifth major in a lot of ways. We've got almost a full house, unfortunately not everybody, but how are you feeling going into the action in tennis paradise?
I don't know about you guys, but tennis has just been volatile for what? Forever. What feels like forever, ever since like COVID happened. So from like a band perspective, tennis has been a heck of a lot of fun watching breakout players as of late. Even players like Grigor Dimitrov doing well in the last 6 months. Players like Alex de Minaur, who like has bursts of being like fire ability. But from like also a fan perspective, like I got to see Rafa Nadal at the tennis match, the exhibition match that he had with Carlitos Alcaraz in Vegas. And I almost booked a ticket to go to Indian Wells just so I could actually watch him in a real match. And I'm glad I didn't. At this point, I'm kind of just on alert on, okay, what's going on with Rafa? Any quotes that he's saying that he's of getting some type of indication of how he's feeling, where he thinks his body is at. But from outside of that, I'm just jumping back into life right now, post-football.
Yeah, it's always tough. I mean, this is a time of year, too, for tennis fans where we kind of reset from Australia. We're back playing. They're back playing in reasonable hours on this side of the world. So there's a lot to discuss. Kenny Ducey as well. Thanks for coming on the show. A lot of betting to break down. But we know Nadal's not playing, and it's unfortunate for a lot of reasons because there is a real possibility that that's it for him in the United States.
Yeah, I mean, Kenny Ducey as well. Thanks for that glowing introduction. And yes, I do believe that this is – it's honestly annoying at this point, like for all the, you know, the lore with Rafa and all the love. And yes, he's given the sport a lot, always fighting, a great example. But come on, man, like just tell us that you're coming back in May or late, you know, late April, whatever it is for a couple of clay events. That's it. Like we all – obviously, I think he's just completely overstepping here, saying, oh, I'm going to come back for this tournament. I know he wants to play, but I think he's being realistic at this point. And at this point, it's just a way for him to get back into the headlines every 2 weeks. Oh yeah, he's not going to play Miami.
No. I think from like a outsider looking in, obviously, think of how much like money was probably involved with Netflix. So that was more of like a definite obligation to get into the foot. We saw the match and it was kind of very like wonky type of style of play. I had confidence that he didn't look like he was injured, but you can tell that he wasn't 100%. Same thing with Alcaraz on the other side. Now, because you're so close in vicinity to Indian Wells, it's more of like, hey, let me make an appearance. Maybe he got in some practice matches for the fans, but I think it's more of just like, I'm here. Let me do what I can for the people who come out and support me. But the intention of actually playing, how many hardcore tournaments has he missed over the last like few years? he hasn't really played a lot of hardcore. This is not untypical of him, is what I'm saying. So yeah,
obviously the money's there. He's going to show up for the EXO. But I think the goal here for Rafa is very clear. It's to finish up with a win at Roland Garros, the Olympics in Paris. Like, those have always been the two things we've known he's aiming for. So I think it's not surprising to see him pull out of Indian Wells, but I think he should just make the announcement now that he's coming back for one warm-up tournament before Roland Garros and then for Roland Garros. Yeah. And that's it. We all know what the plan is here. So, like, don't tease us with, oh, I'm going to be at Indian Wells. All know he's not coming back anytime soon.
I also think everyone on this panel would probably do a lot of things for the money that's reported that he got for playing in that Vegas exhibition. But, look, we just wish him the best, and we'll see. The tournament goes on. There's a lot of great matches, and we have a lot to discuss, too. Some scores at the bottom of the screen as they come in as well. But
wow, great feature, Mitch. Way to go. Utilizing StreamYard.
Exactly. Doing it all. And as a reminder as well, you can also join the chat as well. Keep it clean, keep it respectful, but we'll try to get any picks or plays or advice for the panel as well. Zico, we had, I think, Lajovic just went final. That was a pretty epic match, but we're looking at some early matchups as well. But thoughts on what we've seen so far in the first round?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's playing like slow and, you know, sloppy as we expected. I've been a little bit more surprised by, you know, the amount of the like big servers that have, you know, played well so far. I had Vukic to lose this morning. He played really well in these conditions. Not much yet. I mean, we haven't seen any of the big guns yet. I thought that the Wawrinka Makach match was awesome. And yeah, just looking forward to today's matches. And tomorrow, I'm really looking forward to Murray and Rublev.
Yeah, that's going to be a good one. Murray just keeps finding a way to beat Goffin every time they play, which is a very interesting thing. I'm going to throw the futures up first. We'll get some thoughts. We've got some plays from our panel as well, you know, and some agreement as well, which I noticed, one in particular. But we'll go to the future odds right now on the men's side. Djokovic, the favorite. This is of this morning, and as it works, they lock a lot of these odds throughout the day. So check in tomorrow to see what the update looks like. But Djokovic +200, Sinner +290, Alcaraz +470. Then we go Medvedev, Demonauer, Zverev, and Rublev from there as your top favorites. But Pam, what about that board? And I know the answer to this, but explain what about that board stands out to you.
That Sinner is ahead of Alcaraz. And Alcaraz won this tournament last year. So we're kind of discrediting here that Alcaraz hasn't won a tournament since last August, Wimbledon, since last July, Wimbledon. He hasn't even reached a final since last August. So I think there's a little bit of value from that perspective that he's under the radar right now. He's kind of no longer the new exciting player. Everyone's so honed in on everything, on the amazingness that Sinner is playing, of course, rightfully so, but also Djokovic. He hasn't been in this tournament in 5 years, and he's never not going to be a favorite in a tournament, so as long as he's in it. But I think there's just a little bit of value being missed, offered for Alcaraz being the third favorite of a tournament that on a surface he excels at.
Yeah, we're looking at recency bias, and it's fair. And also the ankle too is the other thing, what happened in that match in Rio. But I bring this up because I had to verify. I talked to you separately and I had to verify this, but I'm naming this the Three Amigos future pick. It's Alcaraz +470. And that's the odds as of today. I know there's different prices, which we mentioned, but Kenny, Alcaraz does seem, if you're looking at a value play based on that board, Alcaraz at +470 to win any tournament seems like there's value.
Oh, absolutely. And I think he's on the right side of the draw. You know, I think obviously he would avoid Djokovic until the final. We can talk about my insane future later. I don't know if Djokovic gets there, but yeah, I mean, look, the thing is they're going to project as semifinalists, Sinner and Alcaraz. They played here last year. Alcaraz won that match rather decisively. And he's been the guy. He's 2-1 on clay and on slow hard courts. This is definitely the opportunity, 3-1, I should say, because they did play in a challenger in 2019. But they, you know, this is definitely a surface that favors Alcaraz. We've seen ever since Sinner broke onto the scene, I think there was a lot of talk about how Sinner was a good clay court player. We all thought maybe clay was his best surface. He had a decent run at Roland Garros in his debut. And then it's just turned out that he, you know, it doesn't really make any sense that that would be his best surface. It hasn't been his best surface. He really relies on quicker courts for his big forehand, his serve that's improved over the last 3 years to get through the court. So I think this is a surface that would favor Alcaraz if they get there. Now, he did retire with that ankle injury against Thiago Monteiro in Rio. That's probably the reason why he is +470. It didn't seem like that had as clismic of an injury. So I think there's a little bit of value here. I think he's definitely, that retirement was more of a situation where he's just focused on this tournament, focused on the Sunshine Double, the bigger tournaments to come. It's a long season. And I do think that if they do meet in the semis, then that is Alcaraz's match. I would even say in two sets again, given the history last year, but also the fact that we've seen now we have a good enough feel for these guys over the last few seasons of what surfaces they like to play on. And Zico did astutely point out, I don't even know if it was, I think it was Alcaraz. I think I also likened him to Shapovalov, but two guys that like just need to get back to playing on slower surfaces, more time over the ball. And Alcaraz, I think that clay court swing that he's now, played well in 2 years in a row is big for him because he doesn't have the serve on that surface. And it helps him sort of refigure out again, like how to deal with not being able to get free points on the serve, the volatility of a match, coming back from a breakdown, et cetera. And I do feel like a slower court, he's going to get back to looking like Carlos. And hopefully that leads to another great season. But as Pam mentioned, Sinner's the new kid on the block now, or the hot name. So I think it's right that people are probably betting on him more to win this tournament. But I do think that he does not get past Alcaraz if they reach the semis.
Well, that's the topic of debate, too, is when will Sinner lose a match? Does Sinner get to the semis? Is it Alcaraz last year? Is it another loss to him in this tournament? There's a lot to like about that side of the draw. And Zico has a future pick I wanted to get to. Not to win the tournament, but another interesting value pick. I'll just throw it up there and let you say you at Holger Rune to win his quarter at +800. So 8-1 on Holger. What's the thought process here?
I thought Rune looked really good on slow hard courts in these last couple of weeks already. I thought he played well in Acapulco. I think he's in the right section of the draw. I think you want to be where Medvedev is. I know he made it to the final last year, but Medvedev is pretty open about not liking these conditions. I think, as you know, Rune maybe had a tough matchup with Nadal in round two. I think he would have beaten him either way, but I don't know. I don't really think there's anybody standing in his way of making it to the semis here. I think this is a really good draw for him. And we kind of talked about Alcaraz with these conditions. I think Rune is also really good on a slow hard court. He's another good clay court player with a lot of power, you know, the ability to hit passing shots. So I do think this is, a really good draw for him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that match he lost in Acapulco to Casper Ruud, I know he felt like he should have won that match. Mm-hmm. That was a very good effort by Casper to come back and basically steal that match from him. So he's looking pretty good for sure.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
All right, Kenny, quickly, got to keep it moving, but I put this up there. Your YOLO future play. You're on the Hugo train.
Absolutely. I mean, he's been unquestionably a top 10 player over the last month or 2 months. We talked a lot about it on the Inside In podcast. Everyone should go take a listen. But, ever since Jeremy Shardy took over, I believe last year or 2 years ago now at the U.S. Open was the first time I actually sat next to him in Hugo's box. He's playing Benjamin Bonzi. But ever since that point, we've seen confidence restored to Hugo Humbert. I was so impressed with the way he was able to return against Hubert Hurkacz. That's now three matches in a row. I know he lost in Australia, but Hubie has the best serve by serve rating on tour over the last 52 weeks and getting so many serves back in play. I mean, this was a guy that was a dreadful returner, could not return to save his life for 2 years when he had that breakout. He won Winston-Salem, which is like the fake 250 everyone wins before the U.S. Open years ago. And then he had that big, big lull aside from a couple of nice grass runs. But he's playing so well right now, and I do feel like he is the giant killer. He would project to face Novak Djokovic in the fourth round, and yes, that's obviously a daunting task, but we also talked about on that pod that Djokovic, first Masters of the year. Generally, it's the time to get him. Unless he's going to be facing a Carlos Alcaraz or Jannik Sinner, he's got a lot to prove. It's just, I mean, this guy lost to Dan Evans on clay at Monte Carlo 2 years ago, right? So it anything can happen with Djokovic at a Masters. We've seen him lose to Cole Schreiber, RBA over the last 5 or 6 years. So yeah, I think like there's a lot in Djokovic's way. I also think he hasn't played a lot since Australia. We also saw him look very vulnerable in that match against Sinner and really throughout the tournament. And I know we say the same things about Djokovic year over year with vulnerability, but there is going to be a time when he is eventually going to be taken out by at least a top 20 player. And Ugo is that right now by ranking. Yep. And again, I mean, his record against top 10 players is just very hard to ignore. He always plays these matches very tight. If he pushes Djokovic, I know it's not a great surface for him because he's not a very good slow court player, but if he wins that match, you know, it's just Casper Ruud in his way. And then Grigor Dimitrov is going to be tough, but I think this is way too long of a price on a guy that is the hottest player in the world right now. And I think you got to take it because, like I said, the top 10 record, you're really just getting this great value because he's going to have to play Djokovic. He's in the Djokovic quarter, but I think he can get it done. And I think there's definitely a path for him to get to another final and maybe have a career defining moment here after all the work he's done over the last year and all the tournaments he's been able to win. And you do know if you get him to a final, he's never lost in a final. So there's always that.
Yeah, 6-0 in there. And I did want to mention before we go to the women's side, Pam is the Djokovic resident, you know, yogi, expert, whatever you want to say. Where do you think he is motivation-wise and also rust-wise going into this tournament?
Both are major question marks. Here we are mid-March, and I'm still having conversations with people about, I have no idea what happened to Djokovic in Australia. Mm-hmm. It was as great of a player as Sinner is right now, just dominant as he is. It was also the most out of form that we have seen from Djokovic in I cannot remember how long it's been. It was so unlike him, just shanking shots. Everything about his play, his timing, his rhythm, nothing was there. So, and then I came into the year thinking, okay, this is the year for him to possibly get the Calendar Slam, the Golden Slam. And then right out of the gate, that's washed away. So both you have him not having played in 2 months. You also have that Calendar Slam out of the question mark. And then clay, this year's Golden Slam, the Olympics, is going to be on clay. So yeah, both of which, motivation and rust, are major question marks. Mm-hmm. And this is where I'm trying to be as objective as possible as well, thinking, am I also discounting Djokovic as the favorite in this tournament right now, simply because of how he looked in January? Never discount him, but at the same token, there's value elsewhere. From the betting side, there's value elsewhere.
I don't think it's the best tournament for him at this point in his career either, just because, you know, one of the big things he's done over these past few years is like really ratchet up the forehand. He goes really powerful from that side of the court. I don't know. I feel like the court, like it's going to slow down significantly in these conditions, and he's really going to be throwing his elbow into it. He was practicing in an elbow sleeve again last week. I know he kind of does that just throw us off, but definitely a little concerning.
And while we're on the topic, before we move on to the women's side, obviously he lost to Kyrgios here in 2017. He hasn't played her since 2019, and the two times he did, second round to Taro Daniel and third round against Cole Schreiber, as I said. So that's definitely cause for concern. And Zico nailed it. I mean, the flattened out forehand has been the weapon for him over the last 2 years. It's not going to work on these surfaces.
It was great analysis, Kenny, but you stole my stat. I was going to say hasn't made a quarterfinal here since 2016. So. But I get it. The value and everything, it makes sense. So we will see the women's future market as well here on Tennis Bets Live. Just going to throw these up there as of this morning. Iga the favorite at +250, followed by Sabalenka and Rybakina respectively. Coco Gauff +700. And then we see the dip, Ostapenko, Pagula, and Qinwen Zhang as well. Pam, I know you got one in particular that you like, so we'll throw that up there. You're riding with the American here. +700, 7-1, and someone that, much like Alcaraz, kind of needs that title since the major triumph.
Look, now that we have Simona Halep back into the mix, hey, my radar is back up on the WTA because I'm excited to have my little jalapeno back in. So because of that, yeah, I am paying a little bit more attention to the WTA than usual. And Coco Gauff, I've been watching her over the last 6 months, and she's a little firecracker herself. I think she really has the potential here. She had a breakout year last year on hard courts in the more North American side. So I think she can kind of like catapult that into, this is where she's coming into this with some momentum. You might think that it's not because she really didn't do well in Dubai, but at the same token, like, this is a surface that better suits her. She's going to have the crowd on her side. I think if she can find herself in rhythm because of the slower surfaces, the type of defensive ability that she has, as long as she's making like a good decision making out there on the court, her court sense, if that's sharp, then I see no reason for her to not make it into the quarters. And if I like a player to make it into the quarters on the WTA, hey, I'm definitely going to grab 7-1 value on her to win.
Yeah, it's very logical going with that approach. And Zico, I was thinking about the women's bracket and the odds, especially. I still think Sabalenka, the way she plays, especially given Iga, might not be her best surface here as quick as she likes those courts in the Middle East. But the draw has to matter for something, and Sabalenka's draw seems like it's tougher. I think Goff's in a good spot in this area. I'm also looking at that defending champion who also could use a tournament win in Rybakina at plus 550. So I think we could see some variance outside the top two hoist the trophy.
Yeah, I also liked the odds on Pegula at 26-1. I just do think that, you know, you said Sabalenka has a tough draw. I think Pegula has the easier part of it in that quarter. And, you know, I know that she just changed her coach. There are some things that look down for her, but I thought she looked decent in San Diego last week. That's another outdoor, you know, tournament in California. And I just like her just kind of all around game ability to either, you know, go on, be aggressive or just, you know, redirect pace. I think she's a really solid player, and I think she can make a pretty deep run.
Before I toss it to Kenny, it's a good point. And if you want to talk variance and possibilities, they're revamping her serve. So this could be round one exit or go all the way if it all clicks together. So Kenny, thoughts as well.
Yeah, I don't know. I haven't been too hot on Pegula all year. I don't know if she's looked that as good as she has in the last 2 years. I mean, obviously there's a lot of there's a lot of work still being done, and she is very talented and just, I think, physically superior to a lot of the women out there. But I do feel like, yeah, Rybakina here is, I think, due for a big win. I like her a lot. She's in a decent section of the draw, just Vondrousova on the other half of her quarter. And obviously, we know about Marqueta. You know, she's kind of like a Caro Garcia, where she had that nice result, and the ranking doesn't really tell the whole story here with how she's played. So I don't hate Goff as well. I mean, I was looking at her, Qinwen Zhang. I don't know, on a slower court, if she's necessarily going to be as dominant here. And Coco Gauff obviously has had all the success at Roland Garros over the years. We did see her breakout obviously at Wimbledon as a 16-year-old or a 14-year-old, excuse me, I believe. But yeah, I mean, that's, I think that makes sense for her to make her quarter. I just think she is going to be a notch below the, you know, you mentioned it, Mitch, like Sabalenka's got a good draw. Swiatek, even if she's out of the picture, I still think Goff is behind Sabalenka and Rybakina. And again, Rybakina did win that one tournament in Australia, but not a very good Australian Open for her. And I think she's going to come back here with a vengeance. She's got a lot of points to defend. And it's kind of a feel pick. It's kind of a gut pick. Like, it just seems like it's Rybakina time. You know, she has these lulls in her seasons, and then she reminds us why she's one of the three best in the world and part of this bona fide big three we have in women's tennis. So I think she wins this tournament. Like I said, I think her path to the quarters is pretty simple, and after that, I think it's very manageable.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
All right, Tennis Bets rolls along. We're on Tennis Channel YouTube, Tennis.com, Facebook, Tennis Bets Twitter, and on the Tennis Channel Podcast Network as well. We're going to get into some picks here because we've got a lot to say and some agreement, maybe some disagreement, but we'll go around the horn and look at some of these picks. Zico, let's get us going, because it's not every day you can call someone with an analysis on this match when these two play. But Grenier to win this one, even money. We'll say even money. We'll see where the lines go. But why are you going with Grenier here?
I just think Grenier's won three in a row in this matchup. I think that he has a little bit of a, you know, they play very similar styles, in my opinion. They're both, you know, kind of big servers with, you know, powerful strokes on the baseline. But I think Grenier plays with, you know, a little bit more shape, a little more topspin. And I just kind of think he's had Miller's number. And I don't know, like the way that Miller's looked in the last two tournaments, two first round exits in a row, one of those to Murray when Murray was not playing well. I just think that he's a guy that I feel pretty good about fading right now.
Yeah, I was thinking about this one too. I mean, you do have to take into account recent form at a certain point in this. I know we're going to make a big deal about court conditions and speed and everything, but how you played in the lead ups, especially in the first round of some tight matchups, has to matter. Pam, on that same note, going with the favorites, and we're going to just, you know, spread this one out, but you like a good favorite straight set parlay. Sinner and Alcaraz, the win in straights is -120. Do you think it's going to be just smooth sailing in the first matchup for these heavy hitters?
So I'm giving multiple picks. You asked for multiple picks. This is of the two that I gave, this is going to be the least confident, and only because it's a little bit risky. I think the question, so Yannick Sinner is playing Thanasi Kokkinakis, and Carlos Alcaraz is playing Matteo Arnaldi. When it comes to Kokkinakis, can he handle big hitters? Not really. He struggles against players like Zverev. Can he handle players who have a bit more variety? Not really. He has losses against the players like Dimitrov. So you're asking, what type of weapon does he have that's going to compete with somebody like Yannick Sinner, who not only has a power, which could be muted based off the surface, but even if he doesn't, now he's added a lot more weapons arsenal to his bag, where I think he's just coming into this with so much rhythm that there's not really much that 6-4, 6-2 type of match. This should be smooth sailing for Sinner. Aside from both, like, Hubert Hurkacz has been the toughest opponent that Kokkinakis has played in the last 6 months from Zverev and Dimitrov. But Arnaldi, this one to me is a little bit more of a question mark, simply because he pushed both Ben Shelton and Taylor Fritz in Acapulco. But if this is my belief, that this is where Alcaraz finds his form, it could be starting with this match. I think there's no doubt that Alcaraz wins. It's just, if I compare them both, Sinner and Alcaraz to get the money line, that was too high. Sinner with a to win in straight sets with a Alcaraz money line was still like -200. So the higher risk play is a Alcaraz to win in straight sets.
Yeah, that interesting, right? Because Kenny, we were talking about this. The Arnaldi Shelton match turned into like a skills competition. And I wonder if, you know, styles make fights and all those sort of adages, but Arnaldi did show something that I hadn't seen before. Now, will he carry it over here? Against one of the very best players in the world is a tough one.
Yeah, didn't just push Taylor Fritz, beat Taylor Fritz in convincing fashion. And this is a kid who is just continuing to get better every single week. I love Matteo Arnaldi. And I'll take you back to last year at the US Open when, yes, Carlos Alcaraz came up with a straight set victory in three sets over Arnaldi. But that match was very, very close. Arnaldi with a lot of break points, a lot of breaks. There was a lot of volatility in that match. I think on a slower court, we actually see an Arnaldi that's a little more comfortable, close to home. Luka Van Asche, that was my first loss of the tournament yesterday. He obviously lost in straight sets to Arnaldi in two tiebreakers, but I thought that was an utterly convincing and impressive performance from Matteo Arnaldi to take a lot coming at him from the other side of the net. Rally tolerance has always been a strength of his, and I think he's playing incredibly well right now. I think he's going to have a semi-breakthrough year. I think he finishes top 25, honestly. He's that talented. I've called him Dollar Store Demonor in the past because he gets a lot of balls back. He's just a great rallier. And it's going to be a test for Carlos, especially with a lot of rust. You know, we talked about the ankle injury after Rio. You know, you also mentioned coming off of an exhibition match. I mean, I don't think that really puts a lot of toll on your body, but, you know, but I also don't think it really warms you up quite as well because, as Jim Courier has always said, oh, what a shocker, an exhibition match went to a third set tiebreak. So, you know, it's all for show. But yeah, I think this is a spot where Arnaldi pushes Alcaraz. I don't know if he actually manages to take a set, but I think he definitely covers the spread, and it's going to be, I think, a really, really good match. And then I'm interested to see how Carlos comes through it. I think it's going to tell us a lot about where he is. And yeah, the other side of things with the Sinner Kokkinakis match, I don't even remember the question, but yeah, I mean, that in theory, you know, he should come through. I mean, I don't think any of us thought Kokkinakis was going to beat Giron, but you know, Kokkinakis has played too poorly for too long this season not to have a nice result.
There was something missing with him for sure. And Sinner's just such in the zone right now. We'll see if it carries. I think it's going to take an effort from a guy like Alcaraz to kind of end this streak. But I do want to take a time out here for the comments because we're going to lead back into the picks in a second. But we've got some nice things in the chat. You know, a Pam Fam here by the name of Huey who's just wants to see more content as well from you. And Kenny's new best friend, someone named Grumpy Kid, actually had a suggestion. He's like,
Kenny's is this
it probably is. I mean, other
he could have just in the chat, yeah.
I don't think it is because he could have just said, hey, I want to talk about this pick. But yes, it actually was a money line dime. It was against Fognini, which, full disclosure, for all the times I might kid or question Kenny, I get exactly where you're coming from on this pick because I can't even remember the last time Fognini's played tennis.
Well, there is that. There is the fact that Fognini's never had success here at Indian Wells. And then Bernabe, yeah, I mean, we've, you know, to a painstaking end, we've been waiting for the Bernabe Zapata Morales win to come. It hasn't come since Cordoba, and then he's only had, that's only his only win of the year, right? But he's been injured. He's been dealing with injury over the last 6 months. I think he's finally getting back to playing decent enough tennis. The Munar match was, obviously it's a tough matchup. Jaume Munar in the Golden Swing is tough to beat, but thought he played decently well there. And yeah, you mentioned Fognini. I mean, he's popped up in some challengers over the last 5 months, but really only had five matches this year. He's won two. One was at the Tenerife Challenger, and one was at the Manama Challenger, just first round wins. So I don't think he's in great form here. I don't think, despite the fact that he is you could call him a clay specialist, certainly he's had a great success rate on all surfaces, but if you look at his best surface, it is going to be clay. So yeah, in theory, this should be a spot where Fognini can play well, but he just hasn't had the success at Indian Wells over the years that you would expect him to have. And Zapata Morales is a fighter, and he's going to frustrate Fognini. There's going to be a lot of screaming coming from the other side of the net, and I don't know if that wakes up Fognini. Maybe it does, but I think Zapata is ready to win another match here. I don't know about how you guys feel, but I think this is a kind of a crazy price on Fognini, who just really hasn't played a lot this year, has not won a lot of matches, has not looked good. And I know, you know, he's got a lot to play for here. He wants to make the Italian Davis Cup team. He was upset about that last year. I trust that he does want to have some good showings here in what could be his final year on tour. We don't know. But I think this is a bad price. I think Zapata Morales is just continuing to be disrespected. And you look at the guys he's lost to, Echeverri, who I'm a born again Etch, Baez, Jera, Munar. You know, you look at the loss in Australia to Lehechka, who was playing well going into that tournament. So, yeah, I mean, I don't know. I watched him. I know Garin lost on retirement, but I thought he was good in that Garin match, the one that he ended up winning. So I think this is finally a good opponent for him, finally a guy he can beat, and I think he wins.
I think if he handles Fognini, I don't want to say antics, but how he approaches this match, that's the test for me. Because I agree with you on the tennis front 100%, but there's more to it than that. So that's a good one. Zico, another money line play on the ladies' side, I want to get to. Tomova over Kennan. So we're going against Sonia Kennan, and we're going at a price of +134. Why exactly did you make this choice?
It's really just a Kennan fade. Like, she's lost five matches in a row, 1-6 since the start of the year. I don't think she's moving particularly well. Honestly, over the last 2-3 years, I don't think that she's one of the, you know, she's a worthy mover on the court. It just hasn't looked, you know, right since she won that Australian Open, honestly. In the last few months after that, she's been a disaster. And I think that she's a player that can, you know, really rack up unforced errors pretty quickly. And Tomova's, you know, a solid baseliner, you know, at least a player that gets a lot of balls back. I was a little nervous about playing Kennan, you know, with a home crowd in her favor, but I don't know. Like, this price just seemed really off to me.
You say home crowd in your favor. Like, okay, I think, but I don't know.
The crowds have been, from what I've seen, like, somewhat dead.
But I also think someone that's been there a bunch, this is a real destination tournament. So I don't know that unless it's like, I don't want to say big name American, but there's a lot of international support, especially as we're going to get to somebody in one of these picks here from a different country that's well represented at Indian Wells. I think that sometimes the American advantage might be a little overblown here, but that's just how I've interpreted it.
Agreed.
That said, though, the other country I mentioned, and Pam, we're going to get to your big pick of the day. That country is Canada, and there's a ton of Canadian support here. It's the snowbird destination trip of the tennis season, I would say. And I know Kenny's got some agreement and some action on this match as well, but Hamas picked Denis Shapovalov versus Bodek van de Zandschulp. Now, we know the last time we saw Bodek, he was having a complete meltdown of all meltdowns, but Here we go, Pam. Dennis Shapovalov to bounce back at minus 152. Why'd you make this pick?
No, my bet is actually Botic.
Oh, whoopsies. I'm off. Bad
bet. You're off. I was like, yeah, let's check the text message again. It's plus 130. I'm taking the underdog. I don't really care about the crowd. I know I used the crowd as an excuse earlier, but this is just like one of those things where Shapo, what happened? The mighty has fallen. He went from a top 20 player. Right now he's sitting at ranked 131, which, okay, I'm not really one to look at rankings, but he's just coming out from injuries. He's inconsistent shot maker. He's supposed to have that lefty advantage, which I love. If there's a lefty playing, I would love to take that type of player to come out with a win. But the difference with Shapovalov being a lefty is it's kind of mostly neutralized because of the erratic play that he has. He lacks the rally tolerance. He's an impatient player. He just doesn't play patient tennis. And going up against Botic, two of his last seven losses have been from Jannik Sinner. I'm going to consider that he went back to school. He's getting educated because when you start playing against the best players, you're going to learn a few things. So Botic is the type of defensive player from the baseline. He is a bit of a counterpuncher. So if I'm talking about impatience from Shapovalov, that's going to be tested against VDZ. And the results from Shapo that we've seen, he's 1-6 in 2024, having not played since Wimbledon. I like the value of an underdog from Botic at plus 130 because Shapovalov is a fade until proven otherwise.
Okay. Well, again, apologies for that. Kenny was the one that was on Shapovalov -1.5 games. I love how I just added 30 and 22 together and came up with that number.
Yeah, thanks.
But either way, Kenny, Shapovalov -1.5 games, the counterpoint.
It's obviously never fun to bet on Denis Shapovalov, especially right now, because as Pam astutely pointed out, obviously he's been an error machine for 2 years now. His career's kind of fallen off, but he's playing on a protected ranking. And I think if there were ever a week for it to be a Shapovalov week, I think it's right here when you look at his draw. Now, obviously, you mentioned the outbursts with Botic. That is what scares me because Botic's had a tough draw and hasn't had a great start to the season. The Jerry Shang loss in China was a big one, right? I think there's just been a lot of boiling frustration for Botic because he's just run into some tough levels and hasn't really played that poorly. And he did finally pick up a win, which was good to see. So I the motivation factor, right? The unquantifiable motivation, the want it factor could be on Botic's side, but I think this is a good surface for Shapovalov. We talked about Alcaraz earlier, needing some time over the ball, just slow things down. We've seen some good things from Shapovalov. If you look at his season, I mean, Offner was on another level at the start of the season, loses to him. And then the Australian Open match against Mensik, who a lot of people like this week. I like him as well. Obviously he's had a nice little run here, a great tennis prospect. I thought he showed some better traits in that match, slowing things down, not going for as much power, trying to limit the errors. He almost turned that match around. There were two painstakingly close sets in the second and third, and then came out against Hugo Gaston and looked like a world beater. Was so clean. He should have beaten Bublik. He obviously, there was a very, very long tiebreak that he lost in the second set, and that match got away from him. He had a decent run in Rotterdam qualifying, beat two decently, good players in Gaston and Martyr, and then again runs into Monfils, very, very close loss, very close three-set loss to Andy Murray, who was just due to have one win eventually. So yeah. I think that there's a little bit of fool's gold in just looking at Shapovalov's form right now. And like I said, on the protected ranking, he's going to have to make a run at one of these tournaments. And if you look at the draw here for him, I actually like him to make a run, because if he can just get through Botic, which is going to be a tough test. But again, I do like the slower speeds here because it's going to make him just concentrate a little bit more on what he's doing. Musetti when was the last time Musetti beat anybody? And then the whole Garuna match, they did play a pretty close match on clay. Runa, he almost turned that match around in the third set in a close tiebreak. And then if he ends up facing Taylor Fritz, we know the history there. So, there is a path here for Shapovalov to finally come up with a good result. We know he has the talent. I'm going to be very interested to watch this match tonight. I'll be an interested observer, obviously being on Shapovalov as well. But yeah, I think this is a pretty good situation for him. And then you bake in the Canadian crowd as well. I think some good vibes can go back to Shapo this week. And again, I just like the newer approach that we've seen this year, even though the results haven't always been there. He's won enough matches when you count qualifying to give him a little bit of confidence that he's going to win this one. And You know, Bodick is a guy also who just is going to prefer a little bit faster of a court. He does like to shape his shots, and there's going to be some high kicking forehands. But I think Shapovalov can come up and win this match. And I think a lot of people are betting against him for good reason, because he hasn't been a very reliable guy over the last year. But I think this is a time to bet him. And now he's down to -130 on the money line. So just skip the game spread and take him to win this match, because he'll probably just end up tanking a set anyway. But I think he comes through and wins.
Zico, be the deciding factor.
I don't know, but I think the winner is going to beat Musetti for sure.
I mean, that's actually the smartest take in all this, because that was the one thing I agree with, that there is a sitting duck there for whoever wins this match in round two. Desperate times. I had to put this up, too, before we wrap up the show. You guys were both on Kenny and Evans. Hey, chance. We've seen Dan Evans pull this out, but the now-sponsored Roman Safelin is kind of a new man.
I wish that we were watching, because Evans was down a break in the second and then pulled it back. And I absolutely guarantee you, we got, come on, Evo, come on. And yeah. I would have loved to see it, you know, but we're starting to serve the people here. But I don't know, Zico, I feel like he's turned this match around with a little more come ons.
It does look like it. And I think Pui is about to win too, who we both have also.
Yeah, we got that. We got Monfils up a set early against Purcell.
And again, I want to scold the host here. Once again, you're skipping over Alexander Kovacevic. I mean, no COVID talk at all today. What the hell, man? We got it.
Kenny, we got to talk about timing out segments if we're going to get in every pick. So that would be my rebuttal to
that. Just got to drop one COVID mention.
No, I know. And I have the graphic built. I know you got COVID plus 120 against ZZ Top or whatever our nickname is for him.
Yeah, I think he's won 3 in a row against Chinese players. Weirdly enough, we talk about Djokovic loving to beat Americans. 4-3 against Asian players over the last year. But no, I just think in general, you know, Zico mentioned at the top, we talked about a lot of slow speed, slow hard courts. He had good success there the last 2 weeks. He's, you know, probably going to run into another top 10 player that just beats the brakes off him. But I think he finally got a wild card. I know personally from inside sources that he was very, very disappointed not to get a US Open wild card last year. He finally feels like maybe now he's being treated fairly by the American Tennis Federation, USTA. And so, I don't know. I like the way he's played. He's obviously Sampras down break point. And this is a match where Zhang is just, he just kind of has fallen off, guys. I don't know. I don't think he's played his best tennis over the last month. So give me Kova. I just needed to drop Kova reference. That's all.
I got you. He's definitely dipped a little bit. I think that's fair to say. Last thing before we wrap this up, tennis bets, we're going to be back next week a couple times as well. But I want to ask you guys, I know Kenny threw out Hugo Humbert as a surprise run. But for Pam and Zico, any other players, men or women, that you think, okay, surprise, let's say like quarterfinal-ish run, anybody that you're thinking, okay, this could be the tournament to set your season up? I know winning is a tall task, but there's anybody out there that we should be looking for?
I think it's hard to rule out Cam Norrie at this tournament just because, you know, he has won it before. I think he's in a decent part of the draw as well. I mean, he's going to have a pretty tough match against Hurkacz in the third round. Kenny, did you already say that?
No, I love Cam. Okay. I was agreeing. I was saying thank you. Someone said his name.
So I just think that's a really good portion of the draw. I know, like, I'm the Casper Ruud guy in here, and I think that, you know, I considered him as well, but I don't know, he's gets really uninspiring at a certain point. Like, he's just finding ways to win. I thought that he should have lost the Shelton match, not even the Ruud match.
Court general, we know.
He'll have better vibes coming in this tournament, right? Like, he's won it before. If there were ever a time, I think it's now.
Yeah, he's another one that's he's good on clay, and like, it's a good mix of both.
Pam, what do you think? Anybody out there?
There's a couple players, actually. I'm interested in seeing Casper Ruud. Man, I just really want him to find his form again to where it's consistent throughout each tournament that he plays. And we do know that at least a couple of seasons ago and even last year, like he was doing better on hard court than he was on. It's like he focused so much on hard court that he kind of lost his way during clay. So now we're kind of in transition of what is his best surface now. And also, like, now I think one of you guys mentioned it at the start of the show. It might have been Kenny Holger Rune. I'm really interested in seeing what he can do now that no longer Nadal is in the mix.
Yeah,
that was Zico. Yeah. Got to give all credit. I think Rude's playing really well right now. Last 2 weeks, I think we've seen a different Rude this year. I think if he gets past Norrie, it's going to be a good week for him. But I also did mention Mitch Shapovalov, maybe surprise quarterfinalist here.
I was going to say maybe giving some love for the Grigor. I mean, I know we haven't really discussed it. I'm surprised I'm the one bringing it up when, you know,
Zeke. I mean, I think we can just put him in Sharpie to make the quarters. Now I feel like this guy's just been an absolute menace this year.
Yeah.
Medvedev is still trying to find it post Aussie. Hey, it's an opportunity. But all right, gang, this was fun.
Disgrace to sport, this court. Should be banned from playing here.
Then he made the final last year. He threw everyone off.
Disgrace.
I know. If he complains a lot, then I'll be worried about saying Dimitrov could get to the court. But if he's not complaining, I feel
what about Taylor Fritz now that he has Boss as a sponsor?
Oh, no. Breaking news. Chipotle.
Oh, wow.
Wow. Chipotle.
He has Boss yesterday. Chipotle today. Who's he going to have tomorrow?
The Boss stuff looks good, by the way.
I think that he looked like he was swimming in that Nike gear. I don't know. It feels like it doesn't really fit any of the players that wear it.
Because he's got Berrettini's sizes on, probably. Okay, a little bit of a harsh joke there. But, hey, this was a fun show. We're going to be back next week again. Follow all the Tennis Bets socials, Tennis Bets Twitter, Tennis Channel YouTube, and Tennis.com Facebook. We're on all the podcast platforms as well if you want to listen to the show. And we'll see how some of these picks turn out. But pleasure talking to everybody here on the gang, on the panel, discussing all these picks for Indian Wells. Round one is underway, and we'll see what shakes out for Kenny Ducey, Pamela Maldonado, and Zachary Cohen. My name is Mitch Michaels. We will see you next week. Enjoy the tennis in Palm Springs, everyone.